Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin!
You're stupid.
Fans, and welcome to the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, joined this week once again by Chad Smart. This is episode 534. So, Chad, quick math. How many more weeks until Rey Mysterio, fingers crossed, appears on the show?
Let's see. That's 534. If I carry the X, move the T, are we using wrestling math?
Well, it's one of the greatest years in wrestling. I'll give you that. 85.
1999.
Stop. 85 episodes away from hopefully Rey Mysterio appearing on episode 619. It's a little campaign. I haven't talked about it in a while, so I thought I'd throw it out there this week. But part of that campaign, part of the Rob Van Dam phenomenon, if you will, that got him on episode 420 was social media. And so that is going to be the topic this week, wrestling and social media and just in general entertainment and how things kind of work and don't work. And I was reading some stuff over the last couple of weeks and just some interesting things going on in the world of social media in terms of wrestling and all that kind of stuff as well. And I guess part of this conversation, Chad, will go from getting your take on WWE announcing the other day via social media. In some cases, I'm sure these superstars were notified beforehand, but a lot of releases going on. And of course, there's always this groundswell of support on social media, people saying so-and-so shouldn't have been released. And quite honestly, some of the names I had never really heard of, and some of them I didn't realize were even still with the company. So what are your thoughts? You know, one of the arguments is this is a multi-billion-dollar company. They keep announcing record profits after every PLE, yet they're still letting people go. And I think just because you have a ton of money and you're setting records and making profits, it doesn't mean that you keep everybody that's on the current roster. So what's your take?
Well, first, going back to the numbers, I just want you to know I did some quick math, and we're only 470 weeks away from Chris Jericho appearing on the show, because that would be episode 1004.
Ah, gotcha. Well, Spoiler alert, kind of. Again, fingers crossed, we may get him before episode 1004.
Well, you can hold on to it for...
What's
years.
That? Yeah,
I'll hold on to it for I don't know how many years that is away, but
Wait, how many weeks did you say it was?
470. So that's about another 9 years.
God, I'll be 60. Oh man, almost 61. Wow. But yeah, on the Chris Jericho topic, I'm still working out the details. Chris Jericho will be in Marion, Illinois performing in March, and the promoter of that event has reached out to me with some tickets potentially to give away. So stay tuned for that. I don't have the details yet, guys, but as soon as I know, we'll post it on the My 1-2-3 Cents social media platforms and of course here on the podcast too. So, but anyway, I interrupted you, Chad.
No, back to your topic question, Ann. You know, I see the point in when you're bragging about record attendance, record profit. And, you know, I've made sarcastic comments in the last few weeks on this show about, you can have record profits when you jack the prices up to what they are. But at the same time, people still have to buy the tickets. So if the fans are willing to pay that price, then by all means, I am a red-blooded capitalist. I say, get the money if you can, but it doesn't mean you have to keep, I think the timing is probably a bigger issue in, you know, if you say on Tuesday, hey, we just had record Royal Rumble, and then on Wednesday you start releasing people.
Right.
And I also think there's a difference between if you release someone and you just let their contract expire, or you don't renew the contract, which I believe is the case with Baron Corbin and Sonya Deville, is they weren't getting, they you know, just weren't going to renew the contract. And like you said, the people that were released that have been named so far, is it going to affect the television product? Not really. I mean, I think Sonya Deville is probably the biggest name on screen wise, as far as like actually being in featured on being a weekly utilized, basis. Yeah. So, I mean, like Bea Priestley, I don't even know the last time she was on TV. Authors of Pain. Again, same thing. Like they, you know, they had their little stable with Karrion Kross, but they haven't been with Karrion Kross in the last month or so. You know, my big concern with the releases is TK going to want to grab as many as he can? And I don't think there's anybody that has been released so far that would really be a significant impact to AEW. And also AEW's roster is also big enough. You know, I think they need to make some or stop renewing contracts themselves, but that's a whole nother issue.
Well, and that's what I was going to kind of piggyback on with that is, you know, the fact that is it better to, you know, you have this, and I say bloated, but not making it to sound, you know, mean or anything, but, you know, you have these rosters that are just overflowing with talent, and even WWE with all of the programming and the shows that they have, AEW to an extent as well, but then you have talent that are sitting there. We've talked about Miro before. You know, when's the last time Miro was on AEW television? When was the last time some of these people were on TV? And then are they, you know, is it, I guess, from your perspective as a wrestling fan, and then if you become a wrestler, would you rather be in a company where you're getting a paycheck every week, but you're not doing anything, you're not working? And I know that some people's dream job is to get paid and not actually work, but I would imagine
for me.
What's that?
So it's working for me right now.
I would imagine from a performer's perspective, you would want to be on TV. You would want to be doing, and I know WWE has significantly cut down on the number of live events and house shows. So they're not even getting the reps in that way. So I think in some cases they're doing these talents a favor. Maybe they can go out on the indie scene. Maybe they can do a Matt Cardona or a Drew McIntyre or you know, some of the others who have been released and then gone out, Cody Rhodes, for example, and reestablish themselves and come back bigger and better. I don't think that happens all the time. There are obviously exceptions to that rule, but from a talent perspective, I would almost rather be able to go out and do things and do my own thing if, you know, the big dog isn't going to pay anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, with AEW, there is kind of a hybrid situation there where they are allowed to work indie shows, and a lot of them I think do, unless they're needed for television on the weekend.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't think WWE, with the exception of a few indies that they have deals with or, you know, alignments with, they don't really send people out to do a lot of indie shows. And so, but again, if you're getting a guaranteed contract and you don't have to bump, you know, you're not putting the wear and tear in your body. So I guess it depends on where you are in your career and where you think you can be, because we see, like you said, with Matt Cardona, Drew McIntyre, Cody, all of these guys, when they were in WWE the first time, were not at a position that, with Drew and Cody, that they obviously are now. You know, they weren't at that level, and I don't think they ever would have gotten to that level had they not left, because whether management pigeonholes you into where they want you to be, and you have to show them that you can do more than that. And is it also, I mean, if you go out and just get a name for yourself, does that, even if, say, your skills don't improve, do you get the same, you know, can you come back in a better position just because you have the notoriety of making the name for yourself, which in that regard, I'll bring up Matt Cardona. You know, again, we saw it with Cody, we saw it with Drew. Matt's been out there for the last, I don't know, what, 4 or 5 years on the, you know.
Almost 5 years, yeah.
Almost 5 years.
During COVID, yeah.
You know, when he was in WWE and he was doing the Long Island IZ show and he got himself over that way and nothing really came of it. And now he came out and he's, I think for the first 2 years, he had a lot of hype on the indie scene. But now, to me, from what I've seen, I think he's just another guy on the indies. I think he still has that name aspect because of his background. But I don't, at this point, I don't really see him coming into, you know, I mean, he had the recent match at Ring of Honor's pay-per-view with Chris Jericho for the title. He's been on AEW, but they haven't signed him. WWE doesn't seem that interested in bringing him back. So do you ever think that he'll come back? Or, and I know he said, you know, he's making a good living on the indies and he's got his other business ventures. Does he need to go back to a bigger company?
Yeah, and this is going to be the perfect transition into the social media side of things too, because I do think from following, you know, and I don't follow every wrestler, obviously, on social media, but Matt Cardona is one that I do follow. After being Broski of the Week, episode 22 of the Z True Long Night, True, however you Long say Night. It. Thank you. But anyway, I do listen to their podcast every week, and just kind of hearing him talk, I would disagree with you in the fact that I think he is probably one of the bigger names on the indie scene right now. And going from that WWE superstar to that indie god, which is what he's kind of painting himself as now, or branding himself as the indie god or the deathmatch king. I don't think he needs WWE. Like you said, you're kind of making your own schedule. You can kind of figure out the dates on your own. I think it would probably be a benefit for him if he were able to be there and see his wife more often. But I think that WWE's reduced schedule, and then, you know, he can kind of take those bookings as he chooses. Plus with the toy line, the podcast, and all of the other things, I think that he's one of those examples of someone that these released superstars should listen to or follow, or at least take some advice from. And I know not everybody is going to create a toy company out of this or get a successful podcast out of this, but just kind of taking some of those lessons. And like you said, I don't think he needs to go back to WWE. Would I like to see him there? Probably on a more consistent basis. But then again, once you go out and become that free bird, not Michael Hayes, but you're doing your own thing like Cody did for a while, then you come back, and then do you get kind of put back into a box, or are you restricted? I think WWE lately, you know, non-Vince McMahon era of WWE has done a better job at letting talents come back in and kind of flourish and do their thing. Because correct me if I'm wrong, but Cody came back and, I mean, he really didn't change anything up from his AEW one as far as the look. And that's the same theme music he used in AEW, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's, oh, go ahead.
No, no, that's.
Oh, I was just saying, yeah. And I, you know, and that to me, that's one of those questions of why, I guess, I've said on the show that I'm not a big fan of Cody right now because I don't feel like he's earned what he's gotten in WWE. I feel like they just plucked him from AEW, put him into the main event scene and said, okay, that's it. And he hasn't evolved in any way. And I mean, we'll see with, you know, what goes on after this year's WrestleMania, if he can do it. But to our point, Cody went out, did New Japan, did Ring of Honor, TNA, you know, was champion everywhere except for AEW, ironically, although he was TNT champion, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's like, what did Cody do that he was brought back with such high, you know, importance?
Is that a rhetorical question or?
It was just a question. Yeah. Rhetorical. Yeah, I don't think it really fits into our conversation, but
it does. And, you know, I remember, gosh, it was back when Ric Flair was still doing his podcast with Mark Madden. And they were talking. So this had to have been, when did Cody come back to WWE? 22, right? Or was it 23? 22.
WrestleMania 38.
Yeah. So that was in 2022. And before that, they were talking about, like, this was the first time I'd even heard rumblings that Cody would leave AEW. They had said, you know, who will be the first, because at that time, you know, WWE was hemorrhaging guys, you know. I think Daniel Bryan had just left, or Bryan Danielson, Miro, and you know, just that long list of guys that were jumping ship and going to AEW. And so they were speculating, well, who will be the first big AEW star to jump ship and go to WWE? And they both said Cody Rhodes. And I thought, there is no way that will ever happen. And sure enough, you know, 6 months later, whatever it was, there he is in WWE. So I don't know what he did differently, what he, you know, because I feel like in AEW, he had kind of become a, almost like Roman Reigns in those early days when they were kind of cramming him down our throats and people kind of revolted and turned on him. Cody was not a heel in AEW, I don't think, but people were starting to boo him and kind of get tired of his shtick, I think. And that hasn't happened yet in WWE, at least from the perspective of their target audience. Now I know guys like us, maybe not as high on him as I'm higher on him than you are, but am I right about Cody in AEW? Was he kind of the face and then kind of started alienating, or, you know, the audience got tired of that?
Yeah, he was more, I would say more of the John Cena mid 2000s era where, and I think part of it is, you know, he'd had a match. I can't remember if it was against Moxley or Jericho for the AEW title. And he said, if I don't win this title, I'm never challenging for the title again. And that's probably why he was never champion.
Yeah.
Because he lost. And so, but he was still like a focal point. And I know, you know, there's rumblings online about, like, now it's the vortex of Jericho, where if you get sucked into it, your career is pretty much dead. But it was like kind of that same thing with the vortex of Cody, where anybody that got programmed with him never came out looking better, and the program itself wasn't anything exciting. And I think the fans wanted him to go heel, but like Cena, he was like, no, I'm never going to. And he said the same thing about WWE. He's like, I don't want to be a heel. I don't want to turn. Yeah, so I think there was that aspect of not listening to what the fans were reacting to, and just still playing, you know, it's kind of like an unironic Bo Dallas, you know, when he was in NXT and the crowd turned on him, and then he started becoming the delusional, like, no, they're cheering me, you know, they're saying boo, you know, no, they're not saying boo, they're saying boo, Bo. They're saying, but, you know, it's that type of aspect, but the fans are actually saying, you know, are booing or not caring, and you're not paying attention to it. So, I'm curious to see, because again, we saw it with Cena, we saw it with Reigns. Will we see it with Cody?
Yeah. Because right now, really, Cody and Roman, and speculation, Roman is taking a little time off.
What?
What's that?
Roman's taking time off. He's not going to be there on a week-to-week basis. Oh,
you know, we've talked about, you know, it's kind of like the Hogan Savage effect of from the late 80s of, you know, Cody and Roman. And even though Cody's the champion, Roman was still kind of, you know, like your Poochie reference. So, yeah, it's interesting to see. It'll be an interesting watch as we build up to WrestleMania, where we're going to go with matches. And we'll speculate more and talk more about that in the weeks that come. But with social media, you know, everybody kind of has that front row seat. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody can weigh in. I mean, I can't imagine how things would have looked in the 80s and 90s if social media were in the forefront. I mean, you know, when we first started watching wrestling, we didn't have internet access. So, you know, probably 10 years into our fandom, finally then internet comes into play, and you kind of get a sneak peek at some things because of the message boards and chat rooms. And are you really chatting with these wrestlers that are in AOL chat as they pop in and that kind of thing. But you know, I make my living in social media based on my job, my real job. And then also with this podcast and with the vlog and the things that I try to do to build up and get a, you know, following and whatnot. So I love social media for those aspects in those regards, and you're able to connect and stay connected to people or reconnect with people. I see the downside of that though, and I see where it takes a toll on people's mental health, or it can have a negative impact. It can be things that cost people jobs. We've seen, you know, people lose jobs over things they've posted or things that have been posted about them on social media. So it's a double-edged sword. And I think in the wrestling world, it's different than any other form of entertainment, sports or movies, TV, music, any other genre, because it's the characters, but it's also the real life person. And we're seeing things sometimes from those characters on their social media that aren't falling in line with storylines and whatnot. So, you know, it would be like, this is a bad example, but Mark Hamill and James Earl Jones, you know, posting pictures, hanging out together on the set of Star Wars back in the day. You know, Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader are enemies, even though they're father and son. But you know what I'm saying. You know what I'm trying to say anyway. But it is kind of a weird, slippery slope with the social media aspect, and kind of ruining kayfabe. And is kayfabe even a, does it matter anymore?
Yeah. And then if they do stay in kayfabe, you know, then they get labeled jerks or, you know, worse. And, you know, like, why are you treating your fans that way?
It's
like,
yeah.
Well, because that's their job. You know, it's an interesting aspect. And I think, you know, as a longtime fan, it is a double-edged sword, because there is part of it where you're like, okay, I get to know the person better. And, you know, if you see what type of person they are on the outside, you might become a bigger fan of the person. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's like, it takes away that mystery, or that, you know, who the character is, you know, when, you know, I've used the, I think I've mentioned on here before, but, I went to Great American Bash 1997, I think it was, WCW, and I met Mortis, Chris Canyon, at the hotel. He wasn't in costume, and actually when we walked up to him, it took us a while to realize who he was. But James Vandenberg was with him. And so like, oh, you know, can we get, he's like, you want an autograph? I'm like, sure. So he brought out his 8x10 of him in the Mortis costume, and Mortis was this, you know, pit fighter character, the, you know, evil guy. And he wrote to Chad, best wishes, Mortis. And I'm like, that doesn't really fit the character, you know? It's like,
right.
You know, and he was also very friendly, and, you know, RIP to Chris. It's like, you know, too bad he's not still with us. But it's that thing where it's like, where do you play the character and where do you play the real person, I guess. So.
Yeah. And that reminds me of the year we were, I don't remember what WrestleMania we were at, but we had gone to, it wasn't WrestleCon, but it was some event where they had a lot of former superstars and whatnot. And Demolition was there, but they were in street clothes and they weren't even wearing makeup. And to me, I'm like, put a little bit of effort. Yeah. Running into someone in the hot lobby of a hotel is different than going to an event where you're paying to get in, or paying for autographs, or paying for those photo ops.
I'd say real quick, remember Ring of Honor at WrestleMania in Houston 25. And after we're leaving the show, Kamala is just sitting in a folding chair out by the,
it's like, and he's signing autograph. I'm like, well, I can't read or write. What's happening here? So yeah, it is, again, it's that genre. It's that weird mixed blurred line of, you know, I think we were going back and forth about the Honky Tonk Man at the Royal Rumble WrestleCon was doing pictures for like, what, 40 bucks
or 60 bucks,
whatever the cost was. And I'm like, he probably won't even be in the jumpsuit. You know, he'll be, that's a whole nother aspect of the social media side of things of, you know, I listened to a clip from The Undertaker. I don't remember whose podcast he was on, but he's got a podcast. And, you know, the growth of podcasts and the popularity of podcasts from these former wrestlers has been amazing as well. And kind of listening to those stories, and that also kind of, you know, you're, again, taking that curtain back and talking about things that 10 or probably 20, 30 years ago wouldn't have been talked about in a public forum. You wanted to protect the business. And The Undertaker had a really good point about, you know, people ask me, will I ever go back to the ring and wrestle with the hat and the gloves and, you know, the whole, you know, original Undertaker gimmick. And he's like, no, that is all behind me now. He wanted to maintain that mystique. And he did a great job of that, because whether he was on Kathy Lee and Regis or, you know, late night talk show, wherever he was in that character the whole time. And so, no, I didn't really think that he was a dead man walking, but he did the best job, in my opinion, of protecting that. And it wasn't really until he retired that we didn't see him on social media. We didn't see him doing podcasts or being on these things. And, you know, now he's just he looks more like the American Badass version of The Undertaker, but he still had that, you know, maintaining of the character, of the original character, where he didn't ever break from that. Whereas, you know, you'd see Hulk Hogan or Randy Savage or even the Ultimate War, you know, they would kind of tone it down, or they'd go on and be real people, so to speak. But you know, The Undertaker's point of keeping it protected, and now that he's retired, he can be Mark Calloway and you know, talk freely and do those kinds of things.
So are you saying if social media had been around in the 80s, Nikita Koloff may have had a hard time blurring the line?
Well, yeah, he's another good example. He legally changed his name to Nikita Koloff. So,
and spoke Russian for 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah. He did. There was someone else that I was really surprised to learn that they were not what Skinner. They claimed to be. And I can't remember who it is now. So yeah, sometimes they do a great job of maintaining. I thought Lana actually in her original run did a good job of, you know, being in character and kind of maintaining that character. But does it bother you as a fan? And I know we're in our 50s now, so we probably really ultimately don't give a shit, but you know, does it take away from the product, I guess, if you know, when I'm just going to use, this is the first thing that popped in my head, Cody Rhodes and MJF were in a blood feud in AEW there for a minute. And then if we see them hanging out at Disney World together or at the beach taking pictures together, does that ruin the moment? Does social media, where in some cases probably more people are seeing those posts than are actually watching the product, does that ruin the story that's going on?
You know, I'll go back to the early days of TNA and Ring of Honor. You know, two different companies, two different set of storylines. In Ring of Honor, CM Punk was part of Raven's flock. In Ring of Honor, CM Punk and Raven were in a blood feud happening at the same time.
Oh, wow.
Now, again, one of them you had to order DVDs to watch. The other one you could watch on weekly pay-per-view if you so chose, or you just didn't watch at all. So I think that really, even though, you know, that was happening back in the 80s as well with the territories, but we didn't have the access to, you know, what was going on. So I think that has kind of impacted the way people view, or fans view, storylines. I think, like you said, you know, we're in our 50s. We understand, for the most part, wrestling's a work. You know, we're not that going to be that upset if we see two people working, you know, two guys that, you know, if Iron Sheik and Jim Duggan got pulled over, you know, today, other than what they got pulled over for, it probably wouldn't make any news. You know, what people are like, yeah, so they're in a car together, big deal. you know, and I think it depends on what your fandom is. You know, I'll go back to when we went to Chikara in Indiana. You know, we ended up helping them set up the ring, and we were there as wrestlers were coming in. And I think there was like, I can't remember which one was, but I think our friend Adam pointed out, like, oh, that's so and so who is a masked wrestler.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't want to know that he has a head fake. You know, I don't want to know that Orange Cassidy was Fire Ant if Chikara was still going on. But now Chikara's dead. It doesn't really matter. It's interesting to see where those people have come to. But at the time, my Chikara fandom was such that I wanted to believe and what it was. So, I mean, if I found out, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, now I can never watch this person wrestle.
Right.
You know, it's just like, oh, you're taking away that magic. It's kind of, I guess, I mean, it's like watching an illusion. You know, do you want to know how Penn and Teller do the trick, or do you just want to believe in the trick?
Right. Because I know that, like, and again, I'm going to go back to these podcasts, but on the Conrad Thompson podcasts, he is, for years, tried to get Bruce Pritchard to reveal the secret behind the Buried Alive match. And even in Stride, we did a Buried Alive match, obviously not to the level that WWE is doing it, but I kind of know the secret sauce, but I don't want to see it. Like you said, I want to still suspend that belief. And
how do they get the ring to collapse?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because that, I think I've told this story before. We were at the Thunder where the Giant destroyed the ring, and we were getting B-roll video of the ring set up that day, and Doug Dillinger came over and yelled at us about it. And I don't know if he yelled at us because they didn't want to show how they set up a ring, or if it was because they were doing something different to it, because that was the first time I'd ever seen a ring be set up before. So I couldn't tell you if they were doing something magical to it or not. But, you know, again, we want to be surprised. We want to suspend that belief. And you were saying something about Chikara. Okay, yeah, it came back to me as I was thinking about it. For a long time, and even I still, because when Sami Zayn went to WWE, there's a famous picture with El Generico, and I had posted something and tagged Sami Zayn in it, and I remember a couple of indie guys that I had worked with in All American Pro Wrestling had said, hey, that's not Sami Zayn, that's El Generico. And so I still, when I repost that picture, I always say, hey, Sami Zayn, can you let El Generico know, you know, that we're thinking about him or whatever. So, but yeah, I do agree with you in that. I think there's a population out there that wants to know everything and wants you to know that they know everything. But I mean, I know you have seen things and heard things that you've shared with just me that we've kind of kept, you know, in the, in the vault, so to speak. But there is that, for whatever reason, that need for people to kind of be like, oh, I knew, or I was right, or whatever the case may be, and not just sit back and enjoy the ride. And that's, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Oh, well, I was just going to say, that's why for me, Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, Survivor Series really are the three shows that I want to watch live. Nice. Everything else I can get and they're not spoilers by that point, but I can watch online on social media and get those clips and highlights. But those three, I really don't want to know anything beforehand. So that's why I try to avoid social media, especially with the Royal Rumble, because they're like, so-and-so is in town, so-and-so is in town. And there have been a few years where that has kind of spoiled the moment. But now, like I think we talked about last week, with WrestleCon being a part of the weekend, anybody could be in town, and it's not necessarily a Royal Rumble spoiler. So,
yeah. Well, in that regard, you know, with everybody wanting to know everything and with social media, I don't, not only social media, but also wrestling news, you know, using the Z at the end, news sites where it's like they'll post headlines or stuff that are spoilers. And it's like, why spoil it? You know, granted, if I don't want to be spoiled, probably shouldn't be on the site. But instead of saying like, you know, saying tag team championship changes hands at blah, 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 just say title changes, or just say big events happen at, you know, the show, and then let the person reading it click on the article if they want to read. Yeah. And actually, you know, if you tease it more, it might be more clickbaity than if you just tell what the thing, what the story actually is. And then the same thing with guys backstage, or, you know, when somebody's contract is expiring, or if somebody gets signed to a different company, it's like, why do, and again, you know, you and I have been on the internet for the past 25, 6 years now, closer to 30 probably.
Yeah, it is.
and I remember, you know, when I first got on when the internet was first on, and I found Scoops Wrestling and Mikasa Wrestling, and I'm like, that would open my eyes, because I didn't know, you know, I wasn't an avid Aftermag reader like you were. You know, I'd read them, but I didn't know who Dave Meltzer was until the internet came around.
Right.
And, you know, I was a better off for that, not knowledge sure. of things, but I was like curious about, and especially in those early days, you know, 96, 97, when you had the NWO and you had the Montreal Screwjob and like all this news coming out was like, oh, this is exciting getting to know the behind the scenes. And I've often said, you know, a lot of times the behind the scenes is more fascinating than what's on screen, which, mm-hmm. you know, is why you read the news. But now I'm like, I don't need to know every, you know, the stuff I want to see now is more like reviews and just information about like ticket sales, appearances, you know, that type of stuff. I don't need to know the ins and outs of everything that's going on.
Yeah. And that's, you know, last week when Charlotte won the Royal Rumble, the meme started with, you know, because I think it was the day after or 2 days after that, then they announced that Charlotte Flair and Andrade are divorced mm-hmm. or getting divorced or whatever. And then the memes of comparing Ric mm-hmm. Flair's title reigns
yeah.
and Charlotte's title reigns to their number of divorces and those kinds of things. And that's, you know, that again, I guess that's part of the public life. That's part of the whole wrestling yeah. Circle, if you will, that, you know, we talk about things that are those personal behind the scenes things. There's been speculation of Charlotte and Andrade separating or being divorced for years now, back when he was in TNA or in AEW. So it's very interesting to watch and kind of see some of these things unfold, because, you know, you also had at the time when they first started dating, you know, Andrade was being managed by Zelina Vega. And, but then, you know, that, so it kind of messes with, and, you know, I think another example is Dominic Mysterio and Rhea Ripley. You know, then they would post their own social media posts about, you know, they're with their wife or, you know, Dominic's fiance at the time. And Rhea's with Buddy Myers,
Murphy,
Buddy Matthews. What's his name?
Murphy.
Buddy Murphy. He was Buddy Matthews in WWE, though, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Buddy Myers, I'm thinking of Brian Myers. But anyway, so sometimes that, again, that illusion, you know, yeah, we know that they're not really. But then sometimes, you know, Maxine Dupri, for example, is getting married mm-hmm. soon. She's on TikTok. I don't follow her on TikTok, but her profile popped up on my scroll last night. And she does not use Maxine Dupri as her name. Mm-hmm. It's her real name. But she's getting married and she's talking about getting married. And I went to the comments and in her bio, she does say, you know, WWE superstar Maxine Dupri. Every comment, or just about every comment, was, oh, is Otis coming to the wedding? I can't wait to see Tozawa mm-hmm. there dancing. And I'm like, she's posting like a genuine, legitimate, hey, this is my life update kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it kind of got hijacked by fans, which I guess to an extent, if that, you know, but Tom Hanks posting something, people aren't going to go on and say, run, Forrest, run to the yeah. altar, you know, that. So again, it's, to me, it's just such a fascinating, and we could talk for days probably about this topic, but it just, mm-hmm. it's so weird to me that the way wrestling fans then also react to wrestlers and storylines and news and things versus how they would react to a football game or, you know, a movie or a music mm-hmm. concert.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what we've said many times before about the separation of reality versus on-screen character and how that is often blurred in, you know, because like you mentioned Tom Hanks. In Forrest Gump, we know Tom Hanks is not a Southern mentally challenged person. He's a, you know, California mentally challenged person. Kid, Tom Hanks. I was thinking about Chet Hanks. Sorry. But you know, you know that's a difference. So if you saw Tom Hanks on the street, you're going to see him as Tom Hanks, not Forrest Gump. If you see John Cena on the street, is he John Cena, a real life person, or is he John Cena, the actor, or John Cena, the wrestler? You know, it's like, and especially got, you know, guys like The Rock who don't have varied roles in their acting, like which persona, you know, it becomes a very much how do you separate one personality from the other? But again, if you see them in real life, you should understand that that is an actual person and not the person that's on your television or movie screen.
Yeah, it, you know, like you said, it does become that slippery slope. And then I don't think you follow as many wrestlers as I do. We've talked about that before too, but
yeah, I follow like two.
And I'm trying to figure out in my head, like, what is the draw? Why do I? And I'll be flat out honest. Some I didn't follow until I was trying to get them on the podcast, you know, because it's like, okay, you're making this plea on social media for me to be on your podcast, but you're not even following me. So I look at that as almost a sign of respect to follow someone that you're trying to, you know, get into your world as well. So, and then sometimes, you know, and I do, you know, again, at nearly 52 years old, I do find pleasure in when, you know, Matt Cardona or Jeff Jarrett or someone likes a tweet or retweets something that I've tweeted, because then again, it kind of helps with that, that algorithm, that clout, whatever it is that you're seeking, again, when trying to build a brand. Now, would I just me, I wouldn't care if they liked a picture of my kids at a sporting event or something like that. But when I'm trying to sell this wrestling brand, it matters to me in that regard. So I do enjoy that. But, you know, I get that social media can become exhausting. It can become more of a pain in the ass than it's worth. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that it's here and it has allowed us to connect. And like I said, I've had social media conversations with Cardona or Brian Myers or Conrad Thompson or Jeff Jarrett or Tony Schiavone or whomever I'm listening to on their podcast. I mean, The Rock liked one of those pictures that from Madame Tussauds from years ago where I was standing next to his wax figure. So, and again, but then is it really that person liking it or is it someone on their team? Because I'm sure some of those talents have, The Rock specifically, have a team of people that are helping with social media management as well. So anyway, I said all that to say I am a mark for getting likes or comments on social media.
I mean, I get it. I remember when Air Bud retweeted something I'd posted. That was I still think Jane Air Bud should be a movie, but
yes. Why don't you write that?
Well, I'm busy working on La Bamba 2.
Okay. Well, anything else in terms of social media and wrestling? I mean, I think it'll be a tale as old as time as far as, you know, what we prefer or what, you know, Glenn Jacobs has a Glenn Jacobs account on Twitter or X, but there's also a WWE Kane account. So I think he probably is one of the few that does that to separate, but he's obviously lives two very different lives too. So I don't think we need an Undertaker account and a Mark Calloway account or, you know, those kinds of things. But it is, again, an interesting look and an interesting conversation, at least in my opinion, because like we said, we're not, yeah, we like the matches and storylines and whatnot, but I also like kind of the business side of things and the marketing, branding, and what wrestlers do to build themselves up. And then does that hurt them in some cases? You know, Matt Cardona kind of went on his own when he was Zack Ryder and did the YouTube series and it exploded. Nobody else at the time was doing that. And I feel like he almost got punished for having that idea and running with it and doing it. And then they didn't really do anything much with him. He had a ebb and flow kind of up and down tenure there, but never really enjoyed the success I think that he was seeking at that time.
Well, and that brings me to a point that I forgot to mention on our Royal Rumble recap show that I want to bring up now is Joe Hendry. You know, I think Joe is probably like the new Matt Cardona in a sense that, you know, he's got this viral marketing of, you know, to where people, you know, where he has a fan base, but I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this. Back in, I don't know, October, November, when the TNA NXT agreement started happening, talent, you know, which switch from show to show or show up on show to show, you know, Joe Hendry showed up and people were like, oh my gosh, he's going to be at the Royal Rumble. He's, you know, he's got to be there. It's going to be great. You know, once his music hits, the place is going to go crazy. And that happened. And I feel like, yeah, once his music hit, the crowd reacted, but I don't feel like there was that groundswell of anticipation for him. Like you would have expected 3 months ago. And even though he's now the TNA champion, you know, it wasn't like, you know, with Cardona, you know, you would get the "We want Zach" chance during the show. Unless they're, you know, I just wasn't hearing them. I don't recall any like "We want Joe" or "We believe" or, you know, and when he came out, I think they focused on like two signs in the crowd for him. But so is, you know, because social media is bigger now, even than when it was when Zach Ryder was doing his thing, you know, does opinion or view get overinflated from reality? And how I'm trying to explain this is, you know, a few years ago, there was a show called Timeless on NBC, I believe, and it got canceled. And then like all of a sudden my Twitter feed started being like, bring back Timeless. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is a really popular show. And then I realized that it was just one person retweeting like anybody that mentioned Timeless. So I don't know how big the Timeless fan base really was, or if I was just, you know, and I mean, that's a bigger issue with social media too, is the false sense of importance of what something is, and echo chamber mentality, and a whole other topic that I can go down a rabbit hole. But first, I want to get your thoughts on Joe Hendry. Is social media a good place to promote someone, and does the promotion really exist?
I see your point about like not hearing maybe the chants or or I think if that were a TNA show and they were anticipating or waiting for him, expecting him, it would have been different. But I do think that, yeah, Joe Hendry's phenomenon, if you will, has been inflated by the use of social media. And as you were kind of talking and telling your story, it reminded me of two other social media points. One of them being, you know, that where people jump on a cause like Timeless, for example, or Joe Hendry. A year ago, Cody Rhodes wins the Royal Rumble and then kind of gives the shot up to The Rock. I think the lines are still blurred here. I don't know if I've ever heard anything official, but, you know, was that part of the story, or was it that social media revolt and the hashtag Cody Crybabies who made a difference and got us back to Cody versus Roman and the championship change? I have a hard time believing that WWE was going to stay the course with The Rock versus Roman at last year's WrestleMania. I could be 100% wrong about that. But then I also do feel like it was kind of a weird story, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But then Cody got the shot back, obviously, and you kind of expected that to happen. But we expected that at WrestleMania, or I expected that at WrestleMania 39, that Cody was going to finish the story and win the championship. So do you think that was the story, or what, or have you heard something different, or did social media influence WWE to make a different decision?
My opinion is social media did influence, because the story didn't make sense.
You think that,
Social media did influence the changing back to Cody, because the story didn't make sense. Because, you know, The Rock comes out, challenges Roman, and then all of a sudden they're buddy-buddy. And that just didn't. And I think they, you know, hopefully they had learned the lesson with Daniel Bryan, you know, years or 10 years earlier. And they said, okay, let's lean it in. And I think also, you know, with Vince not being there, and I think Paul Levesque is more in tune to, you know, he doesn't have to stay the course. If he sees something is not working, or if there's something else, like, hey, okay, let's pivot and do, you know, this other thing. And I think, you know, especially being a 2-day WrestleMania, I think the story played out better than had it been Roman and Rock and at the match. But I think, like I said, I think just the way the whole story came off, it just seemed too convoluted to be the original plan. Or I would hope it was changed anyway because of it being such a, you know, story. So,
and the other question I was going to ask you, and again, I don't know the validity of this. I'm just basing it off of what I've kind of heard and seen. Specifically going back to the first Saturday night's main event, Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes. Mm-hmm. And there was a whole lot that happened after the show that was, and I'm using air quotes if you're not watching, fan cam footage, if you will, of the attack in the parking lot. Or maybe it wasn't Saturday Night's Main Event. Maybe it was something that led
to the Survivor Series.
It might have been Survivor Series. My point is it was not WWE footage per se. It was supposedly something that a fan saw that was posted on Twitter or Instagram, Facebook, mm-hmm. and WWE then started using that footage. If WWE is really truly going on, you know, like maybe they're still rolling just in case, but if they are, because, you know, back in the day, you couldn't allegedly even take cameras into events. I remember leaving my little Kodak camera in the car when I went to the Bad Blood pay-per-view in 1997, because I looked at the ticket and it said something about no photography allowed.
I disregarded those rules.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a rule follower. So, you know, in that regard, we've come a long way from putting that on a ticket to where it says no photography and allowed to now WWE using that fan generated content to tell stories. And if they are truly doing that, or if it's a plant or whatever, or if it's one of their social media people sitting out there and catching it, kudos to them, because they have me convinced that they are using fan footage then to help tell their stories. And they could legitimately do that. Whether they're legitimately doing that or not, I don't know, but it's another good tactic, I think. And you know, I'm not patting ourselves on the back, but the other day Hacksaw Jim Duggan reposted a picture from WrestleMania 24, you know, 16 or 17 years ago, that one of, I don't remember if it was you or me, one of us took the picture and posted it in a blog, and lo and behold, it's on Hacksaw's social media feed. So I ain't mad at it, but it's interesting that wrestlers use and are able to use that fan generated content as well.
Yeah. So a couple of quick points. I think, you know, normally when it says no cameras, it usually means video cameras, because I've taken still photo. I mean, again, you can look
at all the photos. Well, I did house shows, but I don't know if I have that ticket stub still or not, but I'm almost positive it said something. That's why I'm like, okay. I'm not going to mess around.
I mean, cause I can go in my closet now and pull out the photos from Bad Blood.
That
I have. But I know the last WWE house show that I went to, just like, I think right before a pandemic, I was taking still photos because I was trying to get a picture of Neville for you so I could harass you with it. And I had security come up to me and be like, no, you can't use the camera. And I'm like, why?
Oh,
and
did they really?
Yeah. Okay. But there was a sign posted like no video recording.
Yeah.
And granted, my, you know, still cameras now can record video, but I was like, I was just taking photos. And I think, again, it may have been a miscommunication, or may have been an overzealous security guard. They happen occasionally.
Yeah, never heard of that.
Yeah, but you know, I think in this age where everybody's phone is a video camera, like everybody, you know, you look out at audiences during the show and they're recording the match as it happens. You know, it's part of our, you know, where we are as a society right now. But to go to your point of WWE using that footage, I would say if they're going to do a storyline aspect outside of the arena or you know, where fans are going to be, they probably do have somebody recording it just so they have the footage of it, but they also know that fans are going to be recording things. And I believe the Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens attack was captured by fans, you know, because you and I, actually, I don't know if you and I have done, I've done in other shows where we've hung out by the entrance where wrestlers park and, you know, just try to get, you know, see if you see somebody or get a, you know, handshake, autograph, whatever. And so I'm sure the fans are out there and they're going to record, like I said, be recording. Yeah. And then, if something like that happens, it's going up on social media. And then it seems like WWE has a very, you know, a team specifically looking for footage, because you see now all the all the YouTube reaction shots that they put into their packages of, which you and I have never been in, because one, we don't do reactions, and two, our reaction would be like, cool, and not the over the top reaction that they want. So, and I think it's, you know, I think it's a very smart play on WWE's part that that's where we are again as a society. That's how people are communicating. That's how the generation younger than us is all on YouTube and TikTok. So go where your audience is.
Yeah. Yeah. You and I did hang out after the Hall of Fame in Arizona. Okay. Remember, we were by the guardrails and buses. Oh, I mean, buses were right there. So we saw everybody come through. So that was pretty cool. But yeah, it's an interesting topic and something that we could talk about for days, but we're not going to. Any other points or things that you want to express before we wrap up this week's episode?
I mean, I just put the disclaimer that social media, for all it's good, is also just as bad. And you mentioned mental health, and it's just, for me, it's echo chamber mentality. It's like, go outside and touch grass, as they say now. You know, don't necessarily believe everything that you see on social media is true, and do your own research as well. You know, learn that the Dudleys aren't really brothers. Kane and Undertaker aren't really brothers.
Edge and Christian.
Sorry, spoiler. Edge and Christian, I think, are brothers.
Very good point, Chad. Very good point. But if you are on social media, again, don't forget to follow My123Cents on Facebook, Instagram, and of course the YouTube channel. But if you're watching this, you already know that. We appreciate you being a part of our conversation. Weigh in, let us know what's on your mind. I am actually cleaning up the studio, but to do that, I had to make a big mess, and that's what you don't see right now. But I have lots of prizes, lots of giveaways going on. So reach out, message us, let us know what's on your mind. Be sure to share the podcast and the social media links that we post, and we will see you next time.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.